of global warming in an updated version of George Shea's climate change play, Dr. Keeling's Curve, presented by the Sierra.
Hi, I'm Jalal from the Victory Bus Project. You're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Acra.
Hi, I'm Ian MacArthur. I'm based in Sydney.
I'm Annie Morad and I'm in the UK lurking. What do? We cause mischief and chaos in sound.
We use Skype as another musician almost. And we haven't got a scooby of an idea about what this other musician might do to us.
Tune in to Itinerant Mind with Morad and MacArthur, the third Saturday of every month, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m.
Wave Farm programs are made possible, in part, by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
Oh, honey, I just heard some terrible news!
What's that, honey?
The radio station WGXC is going off the air.
Oh, my goodness. Did you know you could donate by check? Give them a check to WGXC 5662 Route 23, Acra, New York, 12405.
And you can also go to their website, wavefarm.org or wgxc.org, and donate monthly, a sustaining supporter. Oh, I'll be...
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
You've tuned into All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Acre, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews. Next, the national headlines from Public News Service.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, October the 1st, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. Senator Bernie Sanders says the FBI needs to probe past statements by Kavanaugh. Also on the Monday rundown, could a Florida Supreme Court conflict spark a constitutional crisis? And a new report finds over 124 million Americans live near toxic threats. Now, our top story. In a letter to the Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley Saturday, Senator Bernie Sanders demanded that the newly reopened FBI investigation into Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh examine both the serious accusations of sexual assault against him and whether he lied to Congress in his testimony. That report from Common Dreams, they quote Sanders, in order for the FBI investigation regarding Kavanaugh's nomination to be complete, it is imperative the Bureau must not only look into accusations made by Dr. Ford, Deborah Ramirez, and Julie Swetnick, it should also examine the veracity of his testimony before the Judiciary Committee. Common Dreams adds the Vermont senator went on to call on the Senate to not constrain the FBI probe to 1 week, arguing a truly thorough probe could take longer. Meantime, Florida is in the midst of its own Supreme Court nomination controversy. Tramell Gomes tells us that comes as terms for 3 of the 7 justices expire around the same time a new governor will be sworn in to office.
Governor Rick Scott is publicly claiming his right to find replacements for Justices Barbara Pariente, R. Fred Lewis, and Peggy Quint. But in a lawsuit, the League of Women Voters and Common Cause argue that this power should fall to the incoming governor. Speaking on the Rotunda podcast, League attorney John Mills says lawyers have agreed and the law is clear that Scott doesn't have the authority to fill the vacancies.
You know, when somebody tells you they're going to do something crazy, you should believe them. And so we do believe that he'll do it, even though he's admitted he doesn't have the authority. And the second those nominations are made, if he's in office and he makes an appointment, we have a constitutional crisis.
That's because the 7-person court needs 5 justices to make decisions. Scott, a Republican, is pushing forward, claiming precedent from past governors working together during transitions to avoid extended vacancies on the high court.
While Scott claims he'll work together with his successor on interviewing nominees, agreement is far from certain. And it can take more than courage to leave an abusive situation, as money concerns often prevent survivors of domestic violence from getting away from their abuser.
The Kentucky Coalition Against Domestic Violence is asking folks across the Commonwealth to help raise money to provide emergency assistance for survivors of domestic abuse. Whitney Reynolds with the Coalition is coordinating the All-State Foundation Purple Purse Challenge in Kentucky. She explains many people who experience domestic violence will also be abused financially.
Their abuser may have control of their finances, or they're not used to ever having control of their own finances. They're not comfortable leaving because they don't know how to sustain themselves financially.
Every dollar raised goes directly to help an abuse survivor with supports that can help build independence, including legal services, housing, food, childcare, and transportation. More than 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men have experienced violence from an intimate partner. Learn more at kcadv.org.
During this month, Kentuckians are encouraged to raise awareness about domestic violence by wearing purple or donating to the Purple Purse Challenge. National park sites in Nevada and across the U.S. are more than $11 billion behind in maintenance needs, but Catherine Davis Young reports Congress may take action to address the issue this week.
The Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee is set to meet tomorrow to discuss a proposed fix to the repair backlog for the National Park Service. Marcia Argist with the Pew Charitable Trust's Restore America's Parks campaign says Congress hasn't made a major investment to upgrade the parks in more than 50 years, but the Restore Our Parks Act being considered by the Senate would provide up to $6.5 billion over 5 years for maintenance.
That would enable us to preserve historic projects, historic buildings, trails that are eroding, campgrounds and other visitor amenities, and ensure that visitor access is maintained.
Argist says even in a polarized Congress, there's been strong bipartisan support for investing in national parks. Nevada Senator Catherine Cortez Masto is on the committee considering the bill.
Finally, Stephanie Carson reports chances are you or someone you know live near a potentially hazardous chemical facility, and you may not even know it.
A new interactive map and report released by the Environmental Justice Health Alliance identifies 12,000 such facilities that it says present health and safety risks. Based on the report, 124 million Americans live with the threat of harm, or 39% of the country's population. Eric Whalen with the Alliance says the map is a wake-up call to those who review it.
A lot of folks just aren't aware that there are over 12,000 chemical facilities in America, in neighborhoods and towns all across the nation, that could at any moment explode or emit poisonous gas and, in some cases, kill thousands of people.
The analysis suggests that 125,000 schools and 11,000 medical facilities are vulnerable to a chemical disaster.
The Trump administration recently attempted to block rule updates designed to improve chemical disaster prevention measures at more than 12,000 facilities. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for starting your week newsin' and cruisin' with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we are online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. The U.S. Senate's Judiciary Committee voted the Supreme Court nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the floor of the U.S. Senate, where it is expected to pass. Arizona Senator Jeff Flake is currently holding up a full vote to demand an FBI investigation against new charges against Kavanaugh. The vote came hours after Dr. Christine Blasey Ford testified about a sexual attack she experienced at the hands of Kavanaugh, with a third person in the room and other witnesses and accusers not called to testify. New York politicians responded to the news. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand tweeted, and I quote, "Any senator who votes to confirm Judge Kavanaugh after Dr. Ford's testimony is telling our country exactly this. The experiences of women don't matter. Their trauma doesn't matter, their stories and their voices don't matter," end quote. Senator Chuck Schumer tweeted, and I quote, "If our Republican colleagues are so certain of Judge Kavanaugh's story, they should immediately demand that the White House order the FBI to reopen the background investigation and hold off on a vote for several days so all the facts can come out," end quote. And Governor Andrew Cuomo put out a statement saying in part, and I quote, "President Trump, you said you would watch the hearings today. I believe Dr. Ford's testimony is very compelling. Only a political skeptic could find a reason to disbelieve her. What is her possible motive to lie? In any event, I fear this will just increase the political polarization. Whatever happens, your decision will be tainted for history, and with it, the credibility of the Supreme Court," end quote. Joseph Spector reports in the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle that while complaints about New York's so-called Do Not Call registry doubled since 2018, the state only took action on two complaints. That's according to a new audit from the state's comptroller office. While there are 450,000 complaints a year about the registry, two cases were transferred for enforcement action in 2016 and 2017. DiNapoli said in a statement, and I quote, "The Do Not Call registry was created to help consumers avoid unwanted nuisance calls from telemarketers, but requests to investigate violations of the law are going unanswered," end quote. But many people who have signed up to not receive calls from unsolicited telemarketers still get the phone calls, according to multiple reports. Fines against companies violating the rules fell from $1.9 million in 2014 to $44,000 last year. Read the full story in the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle. Liz Schaefer reports in the Greenville Pioneer that the Greenville Board of Education will once again hear opinions about whether to adopt an alternative veterans exemption. It will be the fourth year in a row the board has discussed the issue after a state law allowed partial property tax exemptions for military veterans. Approving the exemption would take away funding from the schools and give tax money back to veterans, so taxes would probably be raised on non-veterans to pay the difference. According to the Pioneer, Greenville schools report that, and I quote, "There are 411 veterans who would qualify for wartime exemption of 15% off their assessment. Of those, 120 veterans would also qualify for another 10% off for serving in combat, and 63 who would qualify for 50% off their assessment for a service-related disability," end quote. New York State Boards Association senior research analyst Paul Heiser said in one scenario, non-veterans would get a 1.63% tax increase, and I quote, "Because there is no state financial support, school districts that adopt the exemption would have two choices, cut programs and services available to their students in order to accommodate the reduced revenue or raise taxes on the remaining taxpayers," end quote. Read the full story in the Greenville Pioneer.
Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that Kingston has turned on 3 electric vehicle charging stations in municipal parking lots in the city. Mayor Steve Noble said, and I quote, "We've made great progress in our efforts to build a sustainable, resilient community, and this is yet another step in the right direction," end quote. The 2-car charging stations are in the lots on Dock Street, Cornell Street, and next to the Visitor Center in the Roundout District. Users don't pay, but they cost taxpayers $47,971 to purchase, install, and operate. The city hopes to install 3 more charging stations next year. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, wgxc.org. From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio Weather Report. The National Weather Service in Albany is predicting that showers are likely Monday, mainly after 2 p.m., with a temperature high near 58 degrees, and for Monday night, a low of around 54. Forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, there's a 70-cent chance of showers and thunderstorms. It will be mostly cloudy, with a temperature high near 72 degrees. The rain continues for Tuesday night, mainly before 8 p.m., with a temperature low of 60 degrees. And on Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 68 degrees. The temperature low for Wednesday night will be around 54 degrees. The sun rose on this first day of October at 6:19 a.m. and the sun will set at 7:29 p.m. That will give us 13 hours and 9 minutes of daylight, 2 minutes and 46 seconds less than yesterday. So there you have your WGXC Hands-On Radio Weather Report. For local news, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
Next, we have these reports.
This is the WGXC Congressional Report. Stories about the New York 19 Congressional District from the past week and Representative John Faso and his Democratic counterpart Antonio Delgado and other candidates in the race to be the representative in New York's District 19. This week, the website 538.com says that John Faso votes with Donald Trump's positions 90.2% of the time, up slightly from last week. 538.com currently predicts Faso has a 45.2% chance of winning re-election, and Democrat Antonio Delgado has a 54.8% chance of beating Faso in the November 6th election.
Woodstock radio station WDST 100.1 FM pulled the National Republican Congressional Committee ads bashing Democrat Antonio Delgado from its airwaves this week, calling the ads, and I quote, "highly offensive and factually distorted," end quote. Delgado is trying to unseat Representative John Faso, the Republican of Kinderhook, in the November election. There are 2 NRCC anti-Delgado spots airing over and over on social media and local television and radio stations. They're more music criticism than political think pieces, focusing more on a hip-hop album Delgado released 12 years ago than on any of his political opinions, and have been called racist by some. Gary Chetkoff, WDST's president, wrote on Facebook September 20th, and I quote, "While we try not to impose censorship restrictions, and while we do support the free exchange of ideas, even those we do not support, we believe that these ads are highly offensive and factually distorted. Therefore, after extensive conversation with our FCC attorneys, in order to understand our right not to run these political ads, we have decided to discontinue these advertisements," end quote.
Political observers suggested the NRCC may complain to the Federal Communications Commission about the decision. The Daily Freeman is reporting a Rhinebeck resident is looking to have a decision overturned that gave independent 19th congressional district candidate Diane Neal a spot on the ballot in November. Paperwork was filed September 21st on behalf of Rima Liscombe, a member of the Rhinebeck Democratic Committee and supporter of Neal's opponent, Democrat Antonio Delgado. Liscombe is looking to reverse the decision by the appellate division of the state Supreme Court that overturned a lower court ruling that Neal's nominating petitions lacked sufficient signatures. The appellate decision sided with Neal's argument that she was not properly served notice of the petition's deficiencies. Neal, Delgado, and Green Party candidate Steve Greenfield are all vying to unseat first-term Republican Congressman John Faso on November 6. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that the Spectrum Television Network will show live video of a debate between Republican incumbent John Faso and Democrat Antonio Delgado October 23rd from the Woodstock Playhouse. Capital Tonight's Liz Benjamin and Spectrum News Washington reporter Jivan Biddle will moderate the discussion between the 19th congressional district candidates. In other campaign news, the Faso campaign is attempting to use one of their candidates' perceived weaknesses against his opponent. The Faso campaign is pointing out that the Delgado campaign has stopped doing television interviews. Joe Garrett, communications director for the Faso campaign, said, and I quote, "The same week Antonio Delgado refused to debate in Delaware County, we received confirmation he is restricting the press's access to him while on the trail. Mr. Delgado continues to mislead voters, and his refusal to debate with each of the qualified candidates in Delaware County after trying to claim Congressman Faso is avoiding debates is hypocrisy in its purest form. The facts are Mr. Delgado is the one avoiding debates in addition to avoiding television reporters and their request to do interviews," end quote. Faso has agreed to an October 24th interview on WGXC, but has not held a single traditional town hall meeting like his predecessor, Republican Chris Gibson, and Democrat Scott Murphy in his entire term in office. Faso also does not announce public appearances, and his public schedule webpage has been blank for over 6 months. Delgado puts appearances on his events page at midnight before the events.
The registration deadline for voting in the general election is October 12th. Mail registration must be postmarked no later than October 12th and received by election officials no later than October 17th. Anyone honorably discharged from the U.S. military or who became a naturalized U.S. citizen after October 13th may register in person at the Board of Elections up until October 27th. This year's election is November 6th and includes congressional elections throughout the country, statewide races for governor, state senate, and assembly, and local contests.
Anything else going on your political side?
And, you know, it's budget season. But also on October 13th, the Friends of Oakdale are having a community workshop where they're going to talk about the redesign. And, you know, they're basically given full transparency to say this is not planned out already. This is something that we want input from the public to make, you know, some of your ideals and possible dreams that you've had to have certain things going on and happening at Oakdale. Put them on paper, come to the workshop, talk it out, and let's be a part of this process together.
Yeah, I really want to give them a clap, man. I want to give Peter Frank. What's the young lady's name? She couldn't make it.
Tamar Adler. So Tamar spearheads Friends of Oakdale.
Yeah, I want to give Tamar and also Peter Frank a huge, huge shout out, man. They're doing great work. Peter, you're the man. I'm gonna give you the clap, man. Every time I've come to Peter and asked him for help, he found a way to help out, and I really like what he's doing for the kids in the city. So shout out to them. October what day?
October 13th.
Yeah, I'm going to be there.
You are now listening to Big Vern, Slay Diddy, and the grand finale on WGXC 90.7 FM, Hudson, Agra, Catskill.
Slay, are you prepared, if you had to to talk about High Five.
I'm prepared.
All right. So, Savoya, I know that Savoya forgot that she had to babysit.
And don't call me director for nothing.
I'm
in touch. I'm in touch with
the
game.
I know that. I didn't want to put you on the spot. tell the listeners about High Five.
Yeah, High Five is a program between the Hudson Area Library and Greater Hudson Promise Neighborhood. And it's a 5-week series of early literacy programs. This particular session, they're going to be doing trips. I know they're going apple picking. They're going to Dalmatian Day, a Halloween party. You know, making literacy fun. So not only are you going to read about it, learn about it, but you're going to go experience it. I know the start date is going to be September 29th at the Hudson Area Library. It's going to be a lot of talking, singing, reading, writing, playing everything with your child. So there's going to be prizes, free books, activities, lunch, and it's free and open to parents of children birth to 5 years old.
Okay.
But it's a great program. It's Promise Neighborhood and Library.
Oh, yeah.
So you know it's going to be top notch. You know it's going to be people who really care about early interventions and early childhood literacy. So bring your kid and have a great time.
How did the program get started? Like, what was the idea? Like, what drove the program?
I know early on in Promise Neighborhood, there was a program, and V, you're familiar with this, called Families of Promise, because me and you were part of the brother of that program.
Yes, sir.
Pops. And I think it originated, from that program. Like, there was some ideals that came up and the library really wanting to do what libraries do and promote literacy and early learning. And I think that's where it came out of.
Uh-huh.
The particular history I'm not hip to, the actual program is something that I strongly support.
Betsy, any questions about 5-5? I think it's great. I remember, and before you go, I remember when the library was on the vote for it was
the increase the budget and they wanted to be open longer and more days so they can provide more programming.
And I remember pushing the whole thing because of High Five, which is I think is a great program.
Mm-hmm. And Promise Neighborhood is based on the approach of dealing with families from birth to career, so this is right under what we do, and the library does amazing work. I can't say that enough. I mean, they've really come a long way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, for it to be cool to go to the library, like, that says a lot. That says a lot. Because the library used to be a lie that you say, to go hang out with your opposite sex or same sex friend.
Like, Bernie.
Mom, we were going to the library. You never went to the library. But now people are going to the library because, they're doing innovative, cool things.
Oh, okay. Betsy, any words on that?
I mean, I don't remember too well before I was 5. But just thinking about it, being older, when you want to go do something, like you want to go to the walk over the weekend or whatever, you can just get in the car and go. You make plans to go. But as a kid, you can't be like at 2 years old, like, yo, mom, I want to go to the library today. So to have that kind of just program available, that's such an optimal point in anybody's life up to 5 years old where they're like absorbing everything in their environment and learning how to deal with other people and activities. And that's such a great target time to have something for them to do and get involved in and associate with other people. And I think that's just, it's awesome.
Yeah. And I'll give you a quick statistic is that a lot of kids that come from poverty, the difference between like their schooling and kids that come from like a higher class is that early learning educational opportunities. And the difference between a kid who lacks that and a kid whose parents are promoting that is 30 million vocabulary words.
Holy moly.
Wow. 30 million. And, that's a lot. because, you know, kids will spend their whole life catching up. Mm-hmm. And that's hard. School is already hard enough. So, you know, at Promise Neighborhood, we strongly promote early childhood learning.
I gotta give you a clap, dog. Mm-hmm. That was a good fact right there. You dropped that thing right there. That was a good drop right there.
He said he was ready.
Yeah. He definitely was.
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra.
You're listening to Transmission Arts programming on WGXC.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
Fridays on WGXC are made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Rebecca Wolf of Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters like Rebecca are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
You've tuned into the WGXC Newsroom at WGXC.org. Click on the Newsroom at WGXC to find out more about anything you hear here. Debbie Mayer reports in the Columbia paper that little has happened since heavy criticism of Amtrak's plan to build fences along the Hudson River in parts of the Hudson Valley was heard earlier this summer. The manager of the Amtrak fence project now says that public hearings about the project will be postponed until early 2019 and that Amtrak would, quote, refine the project, unquote, and work with Riverside Town supervisors. Under the most recent proposal, 8 locations along the Hudson River from Rhinecliff to Stuyvesant, including Germantown, would get fences along the Hudson River. The railroad wants the fences for safety and business reasons, while town supervisors in the areas affected say they and their constituents want access to the river. Read the full story in the Columbia paper. Inside Elections moved New York's 19th congressional election between incumbent Republican John Faso and Democrat Antonio Delgado September 28th from toss-up to tilt Democratic. The 538.com website gives Delgado a 4-in-7 chance of winning, putting his chances specifically at 57.3%, with Faso given a 3-in-7 chance of winning, or 42.7%. Faso himself released his next advertisement this week, again focusing on his wife rather than his own votes in Congress. And the National Republican Congressional Committee released its third ad this week in support of Faso. Previously, the NRCC's ads have been called racist and pulled from one local radio station. This one is called Can't Afford Delgado. The Greenville Pioneer reports that the town of Durham is looking for public input about the town's comprehensive plan update at a public meeting at 7:15 p.m. October 3rd at the Durham Community Center. The forum Durham the former Durham Elementary School on Route 145. Participants at the meeting will work in small groups to identify and prioritize issues, opportunities, and problems in Durham and propose changes to the April 2006 plan. There's a volunteer comprehensive plan committee in Durham now working with planning consultants from Community Planning and Environmental Associates. Read the full story in the Greenville Pioneer. The Daily Freeman reports that the Ulster County Chamber of Commerce hosts a Meet the Candidates program for state Senate candidates at its monthly breakfast, 7:30 a.m. Wednesday, October 17th at the Best Western Plus in Kingston. The two candidates competing for the 46th state Senate district, incumbent Republican George Amador and Democrat Pat Strong, will be there. Others participating include 51st District incumbent Republican James Seward and Democrat Joyce St. George, 42nd District Republican Annie Rabbit and Democrat Jen Metzger, and the 39th District incumbent Assemblyperson James Skoufis and Republican Tom Basil will be at the event. The League of Women Voters will moderate the event that costs money to attend. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. I'm Tom Rowe. This has been the WGXC News Update. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you heard here. All day today, from noon Saturday to noon Sunday, WGXC is playing an extra web stream on the FM airwaves, too, Sonic Transmission from the 24-hour open studio in Newburgh. Caroline Parshiman and Ethan Primison will transform and repurpose the vacant carriage house at 193 First Street in Newburgh for the Sonic Transmission Archive, a continuous 24-hour Sonic event with artists including Justin Fry, Audra Wellowick, Katie Down, Noah Cardis Fain, members of Weeping Icon, and many others. Go online to NewburghCommunityLandBank.org for more information about the Sonic Transmission. All day on the radio at WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Pink Zebra, the company that allows you to fragrance your personal space with special sprinkles created from scented soft soy wax. They do home parties, events, one-on-one shopping, and more. Information about Pink Zebra is available at area code 518-567-9420 or online at pinkzebrahome.com/sprinkles from Lacey. Pink Zebra. Change your fragrance. Change your life.
There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, and you can add your own by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org, including some of these events. New York Restaurant celebrates its third anniversary on Monday, October 1st, by donating a portion of all the proceeds of pierogies, local beer, and t-shirts to benefit the Catskill Community Center. Cairo has a town board meeting Monday, October 1st at 7 p.m. The public is urged to attend, and if you attend with your phone in your pocket, why not take it out, make a recording, share it with your friends and neighbors at info@wgxc.org, we can tell you how, or use the WGXC app that's free in the App Store to stream the meeting live to your friends and neighbors so it shows up on every WGXC website. Page. Also, Monday, October 1st, New Baltimore has a special meeting regarding a resolution to purchase abrasives per a Greene County resolution, and also for other business. That's at 7 p.m. at the New Baltimore Town Hall in Hanacroy. Tuesday, October 2nd, there are adult Spanish classes at the Hudson Area Library at 5:30 p.m. Catskill has a town board meeting at 6:30 p.m., and WGXC should have a live web stream of that on the Catskill Town page, also on the WGXC page. Listen now, click on that, and scroll down to find the live Catskill Town Board meeting web stream at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, October 2nd. Greenville has a planning board meeting Wednesday, October 3rd at 7 p.m. at the Greenville Town Hall. Ghent has a planning board meeting that night, too, at 7 p.m. at the Ghent Town Hall. Thursday, October 4th, every day is Earth Day, is a presentation at the Tivoli Free Library with the Dutchess County Division of Solid Waste Management and their work on recycling in the county. The Hudson Area Library on Thursday has a 6 p.m. workshop on the Census 2020, an informational forum. Cairo has a planning board meeting Thursday, October 4th at 7 p.m. at the Cairo Town Hall, 512 Main Street in Cairo. Thursday, October 4th, Rosalie and the Columbia County-based band Pigeons perform at the Root Cellar in Greenfield, Massachusetts at 8 p.m. George Porter, the bassist for the Meters, performs with his band The Runnin' Pardners, and Stephen Lewis and the Big Bag of Fun opening at the Bearsville Theater, 8 p.m. Thursday, October 4th.
Figure from the Ground, a northern New York band, perform at Hilo and Catskill Thursday, October 4th at 8 p.m. There should be a live web stream at the WGXC website. Tivoli Free Library has a workshop for teens on making collage for Instagram, 4 p.m. Friday, October 5th at the Tivoli Free Library. The band Kosick, a brass band, performs at the Dewey Hall in Sheffield, Massachusetts, 7:30 p.m. Friday, October 5th. Young Man Pitt, or DJ Var, from WGXC's Friday Night Vibe Sessions, performs a hip-hop set at Hilo and Catskill Friday, October 5th at 8 p.m. There's a tape loop workshop from Aaron Dillaway at Wave Farm. He's the artist in residence this week. That's from noon to 4 p.m. Saturday, October 6th. The bands Tobo, Tom Greenberg, and Moonfruit perform at the Spotty Dog Books and Ale Saturday, October 6th, 7 p.m. Lex Gray and the Urban Pioneers perform at Hilo and Catskill Saturday, October 6th with a live web stream at any WGXC webpage, wgxc.org. Click on Listen Now and scroll down to find the live web stream Saturday night.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News. I'm Philip Graham. Paul Kirby is reporting in the Daily Freeman that Representative John Faso, the Republican of Kinderhook, is in favor of putting Brett Kavanaugh on the U.S. Supreme Court. He made the statement on a radio show before President Donald Trump ordered an FBI investigation of Kavanaugh's sexual assault history, but after the New York State Bar Association requested an investigation. Faso said, and I quote, "I think Judge Kavanaugh should be confirmed based upon his record, based on his writings on the bench, based on the fact that, besides this allegation, when he was in high school, he has an absolutely sterling reputation. I believe he should be confirmed, and I think that Dr. Ford's allegations should be taken seriously and that the country has taken them seriously," end quote. Dr. Christine Blasey Ford recently accused Kavanaugh of attempted rape in the early 1980s and testified before a Senate Judiciary Committee last week, more interested in performing for the cameras than getting to the facts of the matter. Faso said, and I quote, "I found her to have credibility in what she was saying. At the same time, it's very difficult for me to agree that uncorroborated allegations of misconduct 36 years ago when someone was in high school should be used to destroy a man's reputation, career, and his family," end quote. Several other women have also come forward since Ford's allegation was made public with similar stories of sexual attacks by Kavanaugh. Antonio Delegato, the Democrat running against Faso in the November 6 election, said on Twitter, and I quote, "This is another clear example of the stark contrast between myself and Faso. He believes Judge Kavanaugh should be confirmed. I do not," end quote. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. Anya Tucker reports at News 10 Television in Albany that there is a vigilante Department of Public Works in Hudson painting their own crosswalk on State Street and North 3rd Street. City officials had approved but not applied any paint at the busy intersection where trucks made wide turns on their way through Hudson. The Reverend Ed Cross said of why he could not wait for the city to paint the crosswalk, and I quote, "I would have felt awful had someone been hurt," end quote. Cross and 4th Ward Supervisor Lyndon Mussman and her partner Claudia Bruce painted the road crosswalk. Rob Perry, superintendent of Hudson Public Works, said, and I quote, "So what's next? People start putting up stop signs wherever they want," end quote. Hudson police say they are investigating and could bring misdemeanor graffiti charges against the trio. Read the full story at the News 10 Television website. Stephen Williams reports in the Daily Gazette that the Cuomo administration has won their battle with the federal government over the illegal road signs it hung next to the state's interstate highways. The feds had given the state until September 30th to remove the I Love New York tourism signs or lose $14 million in federal funding, but instead a last-minute settlement was brokered allowing the signs to stay and the state to get the money. The state will get the $14 million in federal transportation aid that was withheld last winter because the feds said the 514 I Love New York tourism promotion signs were illegal, calling them distractions and driving hazards. State officials claim the signs have boosted tourism. Read the full story in the Daily Gazette. The Mid-Hudson News Network is reporting that Frank Cardinale,
remains the chairman of the Ulster County Democratic Committee after a vote September 27th, but there is a new vice chair as Gladys Figueroa, a retired New York City police officer, defeated incumbent Karen Marquesanis. Kingston City Chairman Joseph Donaldson challenged Cardinal for the top spot, but Cardinal won another two-year term. Donaldson wrote to the committee before the vote that, and I quote, "While the current Ulster County party leadership has maintained control of the county executive and controller office, we believe the party should do more to broaden these successes by better adapting to changing demographics," end quote. Cardinal said after the vote that, and I quote, "We're in a good place right now, and we're going to ride it as long as we can," end quote. Read the full story in Mid-Hudson News Network. The Greenville Pioneer reports that the Tractor Supply Company opened its latest store last week in Greenville. The store, off Route 32, just north of Tops Plaza, sells clothing, animal supplies, outdoor equipment, and more. The Greenville Planning Board approved the 19,100-square-foot store with 88 parking spaces last year, with 8 to 15 jobs promised from the new business. The Tennessee-based business has 1,700 stores in 49 states. Read the full story in the Greenville Pioneer. And that wraps up the WGXE Hands-On Radio Daily News. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXE website, wgxe.org. From the WGXE Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. From the WGXE Newsroom, this is the WGXE Hands-On Radio Weather Report. The National Weather Service in Albany is predicting that showers are likely Monday, mainly after 2 p.m., with a temperature high near 58 degrees, and for Monday night, a low of around 54. Forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, there's a 70% chance of showers and thunderstorms. It will be mostly cloudy, with a temperature high near 72 degrees. The rain continues for Tuesday night, mainly before 8 p.m., with a temperature low of 60 degrees. And on Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 68 degrees. The temperature low for Wednesday night will be around 54 degrees. The sun rose on this first day of October at 6:19 a.m. and the sun will set at 7:29 p.m. That will give us 13 hours and 9 minutes of daylight, 2 minutes and 46 seconds less than yesterday. So there you have your WGXE Hands-On Radio Weather Report. For local news, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXE website, wgxe.org. Next, we have these reports.
Hello, this is Rob Gellis, and I'm talking today to Susan Rabb, the historian of Germantown. Susan, can you tell me about the Germantown Parsonage?
I can. The Germantown Parsonage was built in 1767. It was built by Palatines. It has been home to pastors, lay people, doctors through the years. It was inhabited by a German couple named Eckert, and their mission was to make this a living museum. So they spent a good portion of their lives collecting antiques and period pieces that would then be part of the living museum. They also gave this piece of property and the property across the street to the town of Germantown. And through the years, Germantown divested itself of the other piece of the property, but kept, thankfully, kept the parsonage.
Can you tell me a little bit about the Palatine Germans that came here?
Yeah, I can tell you a little bit. They came during between 1690 and 1710 from the Palatinate region. They came because Robert Hunter had an idea that he could help Queen Anne colonize, as was her mission. So the time was right in what would become Germany. The weather conditions, the political conditions, drove people to migrate from the Palatinate to England, and then the Palatines were in England as refugees for a period of time, and then came here. They landed in New York City, and were put on Nutton Island, which is now Governor's Island. And in the spring of, I'm sorry, in the in October of 1710, they were sent here to colonize. There were some political hoops that needed to be jumped through. Some of the funding from Queen Anne was lost because of decisions made by the Board of Trade. So Governor Hunter had to actually cut a deal with Robert Livingston, who owned massive amounts of land. And so Governor Hunter pretty much sacrificed everything he had and bought that property, and they were going to be indentured servants for a period of time, and then they would actually get their land. As they were settling in here, they were finding that it wasn't exactly what it was chalked up to be. They felt that they had been misled. So all but 63 families left the area. They went out into the Schoharie Valley, where the geology and the topography and the soil was much more conducive to farming the way they were used to farming. But the 63 families who stayed here eked out a living. They became farmers, they became craftsmen, and it did take them about 40 years, Alvin, to get their patent?
Yeah, 1743.
Something like that, 1743. Yeah.
On the land out.
Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is that some of those families' descendants are still here. The family names that are on our plaque have sustained life in this small community. This was the single largest migration in colonial times. And people don't understand, you know, nobody asks really, but, you know, we find that that's an interesting detail of the history of Germantown, is that there were many, many more people than any other place at that time.
Now, maybe you can introduce, there's a gentleman here who came in. Maybe you could introduce him to the audience.
Sure. This actually is the true historian, brains behind this whole culture. And this is Alvin Scheffer. He is also a descendant of the original immigrants who came to Germantown. He holds names and dates in his mind like no one else. He's absolutely brilliant when it comes to the history of the Palatines, vernacular architecture. He's a walking encyclopedia. So I'm proud to introduce him, Alvin Scheffer.
I'm not sure we... Alvin, you can be here to add to it the dates. I have a interest here because I came here maybe a few months ago, and it was already been closed for the day, but my son and I got out and walked around, and a gentleman, Richard Coons, was in here, and my son, who's never shy, tapped on the door, and he let us in, and he gave us a little quick tour of the ground. So I kept on passing it. I wasn't sure where it was. People in Germantown tried to direct me, and my son is very perceptive. He found the plaque.
That's good. That's great.
Mm-hmm. So this must be what we see here is a lot of work has been put into it since it was became available for?
Well, we have the, I don't know if you took a tour of the first floor. Did you get to go down there? Okay, so that would have been the first part of the dwelling.
Yeah.
And it would have been dirt floor. It's not now. It's been filled in with, you know, cement pad. That's where the family would have done all of their daily life. There's a hearthless fireplace, which is indicative of German architecture.
Oh.
It doesn't have a shelf in front of it.
On sides.
And also
jamless fireplace.
Jamless fireplace. And also the beams downstairs. I don't know if Richard pointed out
so
the beams
some.
There. There's a beading on the corner of the beam, which is also characteristic of German architecture.
Now, Palatine region of Germany is where in Germany?
On a German map, it would be the Pfalz area around Heidelberg, Speyer, in that area. There's an upper and a lower Pfalz.
Were these people Protestants that mostly came here?
They were mainly Lutheran and Reformed. If you were a Catholic at that time and you were going to England, they would send you back to Germany because of the religious, you know, thing that was going on
right.
in England.
Right. So when people came here, wanted to come here, and they migrated to England first. Can you throw a number at how many actually migrated to?
Historians would argue anywhere from 15,000 to 30,000.
Right, and so then the English sent back the people to Ireland, the Catholic to Ireland, and
Well, the Catholics pretty much, didn't make it out of Rotterdam. If they did, they sort of fibbed because they were asked if they were Protestant or Catholic. Mm-hmm. And, being with, Henry VIII and the whole, thing with breaking from the Catholic Church, they pretty much... But, having said that, there were probably a few Catholics that were never asked.
Said that they weren't Catholic.
And might have made it here because there was, there was two different, ministers that came over with him. Kokerthal was the Lutheran minister, and Hager was the Reformed minister. Not to get confused with Dutch Reformed, they were German Calvinist Reformed.
This parsonage, what was the church that this belonged to originally?
The proper nomenclature was the Calvinist German Sanctity Reformed Church.
We should stop for a second.
So you could say that that was...
Close that door.
Huh?
Close that door, maybe it'll be quieter.
But also part of the deal for sending them over, they were trying to encourage a lot of them to join the Church of England, the Episcopal Church. But it didn't, work that well because when they came here in the fall, especially the Lutherans, pretty much abandoned any idea of being apostolized into the Episcopal Church. But the Reformed minister Hager, was sort of responsible because he when he was in England, he not only was...
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
This is Echo. You are listening to WJFC Agra, Creative Community Magical Radio.
I'm a roadrunner, honey.
Thank you.